She gets pretty good money off that town. She may have there, huh? Maybe they'll have eight in here, I don't know. Not yet, probably.
It's a thick one today.
Yeah.
Down to the second here. On time is on time.
Yeah, they can travel this far.
We put that one up to get you guys here sooner.
All right, Richard, you can start the meeting whenever you're ready.
All right, we'll call the meeting to order. This is a regular commission meeting of the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, October 18th, 2023. Bring me please in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please, Danielle.
Larry?
Here.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Here.
Joe?
Yeah.
Richard?
Here. Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda?
No.
Yes, there is one, as far as the travel and maintenance, goes, there will be an increased amount. The price is going to change to, $19,827.69 due to them quoting us wrong on the wire rope.
That's still going to be reported under this item on the agenda?
Yes, it's still on that, it's the action item is a little bit different than what's written.
Okay.
You added action.
Anything else?
Nope.
Okay, does anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
No. Okay. That I'd entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. All right, entertain a motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I make a motion to approve the meeting minutes of September 20th, 2023.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. I have no public comments before me. Do you have any, Danielle?
I did not receive any public comments.
Okay. That moves us to the management and financial report.
Okay, for the RV park, there was line crews working on the Smith River complex fire. Contacted the port for staging and camping space. The port set them up in our dry camping area and kite field. After a heavy rain, the kite field became inadequate for large trucks and trailers. Some of them were moved to the dirt area by the catalyst along with truck wash station in the commercial parking area. All areas used were charged at a daily rate of 10 cents per square foot. We did remove the gangways at the RV park, and the new Atlas coffee shop is there up and running. And I've been hearing good things about them, so they're a good addition to have. RV park, marina, our kiosk at the launch ramp was offline due to a part going out from August 20th to September 8th. So some of what we see on our boat launches, September's up kind of higher because there's some of August that's in it. So the graph is a little bit different, but we can't recover all that and separate it. So quarterly dock inspections were completed. One new accessible parking spot was created along the river jetty. And the port staff has been notifying the charter and guides that there is a fee for doing business at the port. The fee is $300. In return, you get accommodation to the cleaning station that is specifically for paying boats, an annual boat, annual launch pass, and your business name on your charter and guide sign. They're in three different locations throughout the port. Equipment performed by staff. We did 7 telehandler jobs. We did 4 haul outs. All docks are operational again. Staff assisted Bornstein with some repairs that needed to be done at their hoist and control button. We recalled for their annual inspection. It was completed And our time and the material used for that was built out. Commercial retail building, we had a fire marshal. We do have a new fire marshal here in town. She has started doing walkthroughs of port buildings, port-owned building tenants, along with other businesses where we don't own the building, but we might be leasing the ground. We went through and talked to most of our tenants. You know, they were notified that they were coming. We got most all of our tenants set up with Uncle Off Fire, who's the same place that we used. And they'll be able to maintain their fire extinguishers. And the other inspections that she had that she came through were pretty minor repairs, exit signs, switch covers, daisy chaining outlets. There's a lot of that has happened. So pretty minor things, and almost all of them have been the corrections have been completed and are done. Work has started at the Agostino Winery building. And then maintenance crew, they completed 122 work orders. The port boat was hauled out for inspection. And zinc and bottom paint were completed. Staff scraped loose and flaking paint off the retail bathroom and put a new coat of paint on the exterior walls. And we completed a bioswell at the new crab pot storage area. We are using the ground to use the more of a natural filter and increase our chances of passing our stormwater quality test. Our work order, I skipped a page. Office staff, 17 mortgage renewals, invoicing for gear and leased areas. Their daily task sheets are attached. And FEMA staff formed and poured a second section of concrete footing for the sediment storage basin. Staff then broke down the forms and started another section. We expect to finish the concrete footings by early October, and we are completed with those now. McLennan Excavation completed their work. Builder Marines was expected to start on October 16th. They did put us off until the end of this month. They're supposed to be here and start doing the clamshell dredging. And then our dredge pipe was expected to arrive October 11th. It has arrived, and the pipe welding for our guys are going to start sometime next week. We just got a call from that. So we'll start getting the pipe put together and put that in place. And wastewater treatment plant, Jack is working on the final steps of phase two funding. Port staff will review the final documents before submitting them to EPA. We will also be reviewing plant design and cost estimates with Pacific Seafood and start a discussion on matching funds and operations. So we have turned in kind of a draft of phase two to EPA to kind of see if they see any corrections. It's not signed. So once we get that back and they say it's looking good and it's ready to go to the next level, we'll bring it back to the board. We'll look over it, put in any changes or critiques that we might have, and then we can sign it and submit it. Any questions? Yes, sir.
So I noticed that RV park revenue is down in August, I assume because of the fire in 199. How much did the fire camp offset that, do you know?
Fire camp came in, we made $11,500 is what we made on that. Our refunds far exceeded that at $47,000.
Okay.
So there's quite a bit of refunds to do. We have completed all the refunds, so the RV park is back to moving in the positive direction. In July, I know we meet April, we're trying to think. I think there was some bad weather in July, windy, which cut down on fishing. I know our launches were down in July, and there was impacts that came from there. So, you know, through July to date, we've refunded
$79,000.
So weather, fire, the impacts of the road closure, you know, it's still being closed. We're still seeing people canceling because they just don't want to deal with whatever's happening up there. So we are starting to see a little bit of a change, but the occupancy is going down. So it's kind of your more dedicated campers you see that are sticking to the route.
Okay.
Sometime between now and March, I want to sit down with you and go over the RV park and boat launch stuff to be able to take the impact of a closed salmon season to the council and talk to them about, you know, this is the real world for the coastal community. You shut the season down and it has an impact that goes throughout.
Yeah, and that, just the graphs that you see here that give you a three-year look, you can tell it's been declining, and it's been because of weather, salmon fishing, you know, different impacts that come, but it hits us really hard. Yeah. Okay. Yes, sir.
Is there a projected opening date for the winery?
I have not heard, and I don't know yet.
And the kiosk being down, we did lose money because it's down, but we can't track it because we don't know.
We didn't lose money. It keeps it, but it doesn't break me down day by day.
Oh,
what happened,
so what
it just lump sums us at when it did it. And there was also people that ran their cards while it was down. It held it, and then when it got back up and running, it charged it. So there's some people calling about $5, you know, disputed charges that it shows it all, and it has a record of it. But yeah, it did kind of throw.
But yeah, the funds from all cards charged August 20th to September 8th were ran on September 9th. So our September 9th shows $1,550, but those are from the
right.
20 days. So we did get the money, just a little while. So maintenance, we discussed concrete safety. There were three incidences that happened for the month of September that brought our year total to 42. Four ACEs in the fort reported 47 security issues for the month of September, and monthly stormwater inspections were completed. Are there any questions?
Okay, the motion to accept the
manager. Do the financial.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh.
Yeah. You can skip me.
No, I can't skip you.
Okay.
You're the bottom line.
Yeah. So for September, our unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $327,784. Restricted cash and equivalents totaled $366,485. Leaving our total checking and savings at $694,269. Profit and loss, total revenue for all funds in the month of September was $385,663. Our total expenses was $436,372, leaving us at a negative net income of $50,709.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. So, you can see on the next graph below with our program revenue, the fuel dock was at a negative $41,000. That's because we bought fuel 3 weeks ago that we just started going through now because it's fallen off so far, and that was a $50,000 purchase in fuel. So it shows that, but it's all sitting in our tanks waiting to be sold. So that's that number. And we'll get to the rest of it. Go ahead.
Our total income for all funds right now is at 10%. General fund revenues are at 26.2%. Our total expenditures for all funds is at 12.4%, with general fund expenditures at 25.4%. I put some notes in here this month that I don't normally do so that you could see some of where our money was going. Including the fuel that Travis just talked about that we're starting to sell now. We made our IFA payment, $77,500 for the third quarter. Our RV park refunds, I have $41,000 listed here, but that totaled out at $47,947 for the road closure and the river fire. And then we put in a little chart here of expenditures for our projects, what we spent, what we're waiting on, what we've gotten back so far. So that kind of explains why our
net income and our net expenditures is our net 10 to 12% because we brought so much out for our project.
Okay. So that, we tried to put a little more detail in here so it kind of explained, you know, when we were going through spending our money through our FEMA project, you know, it kind of, we started with cash, we go down to the bottom, and then we, as our reimbursements come, we'll come back up, and we are at the bottom of that, so that's why our revenues are so tight right now, but reimbursements are on the way. We have an outstanding, you know, about $774,000 we're waiting on right now. So.
How long has that been outstanding, Travis?
We are on about 60 days right now, so we're looking at another 30 days until FEMA estimates us at 90 days to get a reimbursement. And then we'll be able, once we get that, then we will submit to Business Oregon for the remaining 25%. So there's still more money out there with, coming from Business Oregon.
Do you have any sense how a federal shutdown would change that? I suspect that would stop the process.
Not for our projects and consulting.
No, I mean for the reimbursement.
The reimbursement, no, it shouldn't stop our reimbursement. Any projects, from what I understand, any projects that are in process or being thought of, those all stop and freeze. But our money is already set aside, and from the sounds of it, FEMA people that do our reimbursements should be at work.
Okay.
So, and we haven't heard anything that we're going to be impacted by it. Just projects that actually haven't started yet will be.
Okay. All right. Any questions? All right. Compliment you. Good job. Clear, thorough. I'm learning not to be jerk over these things because there's always a bottom line somewhere in there that we don't know about. Okay, accept the motion to approve the management.
I make a motion to approve the management and financial reports as discussed.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to the HMGP review and public comment period.
Okay, so this is our second meeting, opening the floor for any comments, public comments regarding our hazard mitigation plan. Is there any questions about our hazard mitigation plan? Because I'm not going to go through this again. We don't have to.
Very thorough.
Does anybody in the audience have a question about what the hazard mitigation plan is?
Okay, so I will get back to you guys. We may have a special meeting to do a final approval so we can get this turned in sooner than the next month. But we have to let this kind of run its course for today, and then we can schedule another meeting to get it turned in. So hopefully we can keep the ball rolling on our hazard mitigation money that we've been waiting on. This is what we've been waiting on for that.
So are you aware of any comments on it before from the comments?
I have not received any comments. Nope. I haven't received any comments. I know there was questions about some of the historical facts that were in here. I did look into a lot of it. Most all of it is found throughout different websites. If you Google it through either Portland State, the Corps of Engineers themselves, there's lots of different places where some of this information comes from, not all from one place, but different websites that can produce that information of the historical data.
Where do they turn it into?
Huh?
Where do you turn it into?
This? Into OEM?
Thank you.
Okay. That brings us to action items. Action item A, amending the public contracting rule. Resolution number 2023-08.
Okay, so the state of Oregon passed Senate Bill 1047, updating the public contracting rules. So for small procurements, it went from $10,000 to $25,000. And intermediate procurements went from between $25,000 and $250,000. It used to be between $10,000 and $150,000. So they have upped that, and I would like to update our contracting rules just so it helps with procurements, seeing that things are getting more expensive. You know, allowing an intermediate procurement to be up to $250,000 basically puts us in a better position to where you can go out and get competitive quotes. It used to be at anything over $150,000 would go to a formal bidding process, which is very long, drug out, and there's a lot more paperwork and legwork to get to those contracts. So this should help us with the inflation that's been going on.
So just so I understand, Travis, then, so under small procurements under the $25,000, that no longer has to go out for bid. Is that what I understand per the state law? Or does it still have to go out for bid?
You can, it basically, so a small procurement like that, you can sole source for up to $25,000 now to one person, or you can just get call and get quotes. If you just get call, get three quotes, you know, you can do that. Intermediate procurement, still three quotes, but they have to be written, you know, handwritten. This small procurements are kind of just for small purchases to help push things along. Hope that answers your question.
So we have given you authorization for up to $10,000.
Yes.
Do we need to think about that and maybe up it?
Personally, right now, no. I don't think so. I think $10,000 keeps me well within things that I can, you know, need to buy for our port day-to-day stuff. You know, this ups our amount, but, you know, you start spending $20,000 or $25,000, I just feel like it's better to talk about that as a group, just given we don't have that much money to be utilizing that kind of freedom. So I think we should just keep my attention.
Okay.
All right,
good. Anything else? Any questions? Motion? Motion to approve resolution number 2023-08, amending public contracting rules and prescribing rules and procedures for public contracting.
I second.
Yeah. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Okay, that brings us the state and local fiscal recovery fund.
So we talked about this a little bit in the last meeting. We brought a couple different options. Since then, during that meeting, we talked about a tsunami siren. I had since talked to the county. The county seems to think there possibly is a grant opportunity for all three of the ports to look at. That would put us kind of all on the same alert system and would be county ran. So I think overall that would be a better setup for us to explore than taking on that responsibility ourselves. So I reviewed some more other projects, and our 1200Z permit that we have, our stormwater testing, we are in tier two. With that, we have asked for a year-long extension to implement the tier two. We probably will not meet that deadline, especially because of this delay and how far out paving and storm drains are through that. So in our Tier 2 Corrective Action Plan, which is attached here, this is kind of a bigger packet, but it is called out that one of our Tier 2 Corrective Action Plans is to install an oil-water separator in the boatyard. The engineer's estimate on cost of buying one and installing it is at $40,000. The state local fiscal recovery funds, you can only do projects that are eligible. Stormwater management is one of them. So what I'm proposing is to buy two oil water separators, which will help our case when we go to DEQ, possibly asking for a longer extension, that we have done as much as we possibly can with the funding that is available to us. The two oil water separators that we have picked out, one will be for the boatyard and one will be for the gear storage area that we have recently created where the green building's at and where we did the bioswell. We would install one in that, and coupled with reducing our industrial footprint down low and moving it, DEQ should be pretty receptive to the work that we've done. The port will install these oil water separators. Each one to purchase them are $30,000. So the funds that we have is $50,000. So on top of the $50,000 that I would also be asking us to put in an additional $10,000 to get two of them, and then the port staff would install them, obviously, to help cut costs on the end of it. Is there any questions? I'm very concerned about our Tier 2. Just so everybody knows, if we don't comply with the Tier 2 guidelines, we face a very strong reality of our industrial footprint, gear storage areas where our commercial boats do a lot of the work, effectively be shut down until the corrections are made. So I'm trying to keep up ahead of that.
And this will be a step down the road with the eventual solution being paving.
Paving is ultimately the goal we're trying to get at, encapsulating the contaminants that we're constantly fighting right now, and get ourselves a new surface and proper drainage that's draining at the rate it should be. And then that should allow us to put in more infrastructures, bags, you know, whatever we need to do, and treat them at those points instead of trying to chase stormwater through dirt. It's really hard.
Will remain in place when the paving arrives, right?
Yes, all this will stay in place. It is, goes hand in hand with, you know, what the end look of our hazard mitigation work that we're planning on doing.
So when you and I spoke about this, you were saying that the engineer was calling out for 690 cubic feet a second or minute. How much smaller are these two than what he's called out for the boatyard?
These are 692 gallons. I didn't change what it was. I didn't want to run the risk of downsizing it to find out we needed more, especially after our engineer already called out for it. So I just left it at the 600 gallons per minute, and just trust in the engineer's report that he gave us. And it gives us adequate enough, I think, for expansion. When we pave, the water flow is going to pick up, you know, two or three times the velocity, so and the amount. So I think we should stick with what we have, and it's going to cost us. By doing that, I was trying to get us within the $50,000 that were provided for us. But at the end of the day, I felt it better that we just spend the extra $10,000 and get what's called out.
I would just point out yet again, as we see throughout our budget, this is another $60,000 that we're being required to spend just to stay within the permit requirements from the various state and federal agencies that have a finger in our pie. And this, you know, people often ask, well, where does all the money you guys spend go? Well, a lot of it goes to this. And in visiting other even state agencies, you know, a fairly large percentage of their budget is spent on compliance with regulatory requirements. So
with the extra, you know, the rock that we put down in the where the green building area was, we just did that. We put storm drain tops and poured concrete, the bioswale that we're doing, and this will spend $85,000-$90,000 probably by the end of the year on stormwater infrastructure.
Okay, never mind. I'll ask it there.
Okay.
Okay, any further questions or comments? All right. Motion.
I make a motion to approve purchasing one oil separator for the boatyard and a second oil separator for the new crab pot storage area using state and local recovery funds to meet the requirements of a Tier 2 report.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Karen.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yeah. Action item C, the Borstein Seafood Lease Amendment Number One.
Okay, so these are a little bit.
Can we do C, D, and E all in one explanation?
That's kind of what I'm going to put together right here.
Great.
So action items C, D, and E are lease amendments. Typically, when we bring you guys lease amendments, I have talked to and have basically a signature ready that when I bring it to you guys, it's approved. These lease amendments all have one thing in common, and it's adding our landing fee rate to their lease. I have sent out a draft copy to the three receiving docs. I have not heard anything back yet. However, bringing these to you guys right now and having an approval from you guys kind of sets our stance on going to them that us as a, you know, collectively have agreed that this is what we would like to add to your lease. My hope is that everyone will comply with it. If any of them decide not to, I will bring that back to the board and we will discuss what our next steps going forward will be. So these will be getting your guys' signature first, and then I will be going to the receiving docs to get their signatures for these, and I will report back if anything other than that happens. So back to action item C, this Borstein's lease amendment. This is two parts to it. This is adding landing fees, and they have a their current lease is up for their five-year renewal. That's in December, that their current lease ends December 31st. So it will be another five-year extension that will take them through December 31st of 2028 and adding the landing fee rate to their current lease.
And the other two are just landing fees?
The other two will be just amending for a landing fee because they are not up for a lease renewal yet. Their term hasn't. Borstein is. So it's, this is the ideal setting that we're looking for to add this. So this one should be pretty straightforward for us going forward.
Okay, and just for the record, so we recall, we discussed this sometime in the early in the year, the landing fees. And we passed a resolution about the landing fees. It included language that the funds derived from the landing fee would be put in a fund dedicated to the repair of receiving docks and fish processing facilities. So we're clear that that's where this is going. It's not just a fee that goes into our general fund. It's specifically earmarked for that purpose.
Right. And they are, when I sent this out, we did attach the resolution, the rate that was approved as well. So we're constantly putting in there that the backup is there, that this has been approved. So I'm hoping that the compliance will be there.
Okay. All right, let's deal with item C first.
Motion to approve Borstein Seafood Inc. Lease Amendment Number One, and motion to approve Hallmark Fisheries Lease Amendment Number Two, and motion to approve Pacific Seafood Lease Amendment Number One.
Second.
Wow.
Good.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. You want to do them individually, Danielle?
Nope, I love it. Let's go. Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yep. Okay, that brings us to action item F, the Travelers Meeting.
Okay, so we had our annual Travelift inspection. This is the sixth annual inspection on the machine. This is the one where we're going to change the amount, but on the second page, well, the first page behind it kind of take it. You have that, okay. So you'll see on their original invoice, down towards the bottom, the wire rope half inch quoted at $3,478. They did write me an email saying they were wrong on the part number and that the actual number is $5,790. So that will be reflected in the motion number. We did have some hoses that needed to be replaced. There's some badly corroded motors on the winches that need to be replaced that are expensive. They're $1,000 a piece. And so the annual inspection is attached to this. Given everything that they went through, I do have a quote in here. I am recommending that we have Travelist do the work and install it. So the total of it will be $19,827.69. Major reasons for this, you know, we are 7 years into owning this machine. It's we will have it paid off in a month.
Next week.
It'll be paid off.
Yep.
But due to us not having a cover, a shelter put on it, 7 years of being outside, we try and keep up on the rust. We paint. We've taped the fittings. But everything that we do is just the best we can given the environment that's out there. The wire rope, it's 7 years old. They estimate that that wire rope is good for 7 to 10 years. And given our atmosphere, they recommend that we stay to the low end of that recommendation. So there is quite a few more repairs to do as far as the annual inspection goes, but this is the first time we've had to replace the motors and the wire rope, which combined is almost $10,000 a month.
Well, just so everybody's clear what we're talking about, this is a big device that lifts boats out of the water so they can be serviced and worked on, and it handles how many tons? 50 tons.
50 tons.
So these kind of items are not insignificant when you're slinging loads like that.
Yep, and keeping all the reports and the annual inspections are keeps everybody safe, keeps us up to what we need to be doing.
Okay. Any comments or questions? All right. Motion. Motion to approve Kedrick equipment to complete repairs to the travel lift as listed on annual inspection in the amount of $19,827.69.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Karen?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. I got ahead of that, didn't I?
That was a yes.
Pape is the other one that we typically have to it, but he also said that he would rather them to it, given the repairs they have called out and reaving the wire rope and all of that. He just said it would be best if they came in. Get their name on it.
Okay, that brings us to action item B, the boatyard shop building.
Okay. We left off on this. The last meeting we had was December 21st of 2022. The board asked me to start seeking proposals on a stick-built warehouse building. I have not yet found a designer or an engineer for a building. I wanted to utilize this time to bring it back up. You know, the fire marshal did go through there. That was the worst building that we had as far as fixes and repairs needed to go. We have been continuing our inspections on it, and there has been no changes, but the end result is we still have two temporary posts holding up a extremely battered, rotted out wall, and the boat shop yard building, it's in pretty poor shape. So I still think we should look into this, but I wanted to kind of get your guys' approval because it is going to be seeking a new design and there will be costs. We attached, I did redo kind of a layout. I'm leaning towards a 40 by 60 shop, two doors, two of them to start with. We could section them off, stick built. It will give us an option to do either a concrete or an asphalt floor. Kind of looking at these things as bare bones as possible, only putting in there what we have to. Any upgrades or extra things that are wanted in there could be picked up by the tenant if they so wish to do that. I also did attach an amortization schedule for a loan at $150,000, $350,000, and $500,000. We need a new shop building, and I wanted to utilize this time. The fire marshal inspections are kind of what really pushed it into overdrive, is that there surely is going to come a point where we're going to have to make a decision one way or the other. So I figured no better time than now. Is there any questions? What I'm asking to do is for me to go back out, seek designs and cost estimates for new shop buildings.
I have a few, Travis.
Yeah.
So you're talking about splitting the currently with the two buildings that we have. Will it if we did two 2,400-foot buildings, split them in half, gave each tenant, would it currently suffice the four tenants that we have down there? Because I think we only have four tenants in that building.
We have four tenants now. Yes, Kenny has said before he could definitely make through with a smaller building. Joe, I'm sure it'd be close to the same size you're kind of in right now. Pacific Hooker, same thing. I think they would make do with what we had to do down there. I can't ever remember his name, but the gentleman from the hotel there. I think there'd be a combination that can be made to get him in there. There also is something to be said that there might be an opportunity. The front of that building and where he's at, that's in relatively good shape. Inside it's in good shape. It's the only part about that building that is good. So obviously if we went down this road, I would get everything built, and as we are tearing down, I would give him as much opportunity to make sense, but we may look at putting new metal on that and keeping him there. It's not anything set in stone, but the buildings that we have would occupy, I think, everybody that we have.
Sanitation purposes. We currently have, what, two bathrooms down there? How would that play out?
There's one bathroom. So is what I would propose to do is when we're tearing down the shop building, when we get to that point, we leave a standalone bathroom where the current bathroom is. It's already hooked up. We just leave it there and, you know, remodel a small bathroom for it to fit and utilize and keep the same water and sewer that's already there. And it would also help to where we're not putting water and sewer into these new buildings, which would dramatically cut our costs.
Any idea on the height that you would wish to build?
You'd have to have a minimum of a 12-foot door in there, but that's kind of some of the things. It'd be nice if we had 14-foot roll-up doors with a 16-foot ceiling. That way, if you, say, wanted to add a second floor or, something that you would have actually the headroom to do that. So it would be kind of in the seeking of designs, is playing around with door heights. And
what's the height of our travel lift?
22 feet.
So at least
23 feet.
I just wonder if there's any way that we
can build it. I think it's 25 feet. It's 22 feet wide. I think 25 feet tall.
So we need a fairly tall building to be able to build an awning basically off the side of it to at least provide some coverage for our travel lift.
Yes, and for our travel lift, I will be looking into seeing if we can commingle our dredge and covering all of that equipment and see if there's room to put a travel lift inside a shelter utilized by the dredge equipment also. It comes with two containers. And they make relatively inexpensive tops. Mm-hmm. They're like a canvas top, really similar to on your way to Grants Pass. I think it was Rough and Ready, I think is the plant, that mill that closed down. Across from it at that soil place, they have a couple of those type of things set up. Toledo also has one for their smaller travel lift that I think we can incorporate with our FEMA money to get a shelter over the top of that.
Do we have, by chance, because like the farmer's market out here, that building, that tent that they had, I've only had like a 5-year, 6-year lifespan on it. Have you checked on that?
The lifespan that we've been looking at, I think the Big Top, I think is what it is. I think they come with, it's a 15-year warranty. Don't hold me completely to that, but it seemed reasonable for the price that they were doing. It wasn't going to be 5 years or, you know, the wind comes up. And I got the idea, like I said, from Toledo, because they had one you could put 3 of our travel lifts in. And they just had it bolted down to concrete blocks. And they said they have had some absolute ripping wind through there, and they haven't had it tear, you know, anything. It seemed like a really good idea, and it's been out in the elements somewhere here in Oregon that you can actually say you've seen it. So.
Just for what it's worth, I have buildings with 12-foot doors and 14-foot doors, and my boat, which isn't a big boat, but it does have a radar on it, barely.
At a 12-foot door.
So I think 14 should be kind of the minimum
that
you're looking at. The other thing, I have an OSB sheet roof with metal on top of it, as opposed to metal on the trusses with plastic insulation. The OSB sheathing is a much better way to go than that plastic stuff that they string up there with it.
We will not be insulating these buildings for our tenants. They can put a sweatshirt over.
Well, the reason they put the insulation is because of sweating and condensation. But the OSB doesn't do that. So, it's, of course, that's in Lapine, and that's a snow load requirement, but it's a far better, you know, we can talk about that.
I'm hoping that, you know, there's lots of different types of pole barns, you know, out there, stick-built pole barns. I'm trying to get away from the steel buildings just for ease of us to repair, ease of local contractors to put up and install. I think it's going to be a cheaper way to go. I wish we could spend a lot more money, but I don't think it's going to be in the cards. But I'm still going to look back into it and price check them. But if they come out significantly higher or outside of what a budget I think we could do, I'm not going to present it to you.
I will say that a metal building, which I haven't erected, will give you the concrete slab because you'll need it to tie it down, versus your pole barn where you can have a dirt floor. So,
and that's where I'm hoping that we might also save a little bit of money, is that you can put asphalt on a pole barn. The steel buildings, your slab becomes structural to the building, which when we were going through price quoting of, you know, almost a year ago when we were doing this, the contractors' quotes and estimated prices, it just seemed like if you were going to steel building, they saw you coming, and it was just significantly more expensive. So we'll still look into it. I mean, it's still an option that I want to at least put a price to, but if we get the same information or relatively close, I have a feeling they're going to be probably more expensive. And the other thing is, too, that we have to think about is, you know, who are our current lease pricing, you know, prices that we're leasing for now, that if we build something that ends up being a lot more expensive, we have to lease it for more, and may put our current tenants paying significantly amount more than what they are now, versus something as bare bones as possible that we can get them in there and keep it affordable for the current tenants that we have and any future tenants that come in there to keep us competitive.
Okay, so what we're deciding on here is just to give you the go ahead to start the process.
I'm going to have to find, you know, start getting information and put it together. But I just wanted, it's a big deal. And we went through this exercise before. And if I go down this road again, and given the situation we are right now, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew this is kind of a focus. No matter what we do here, we will be looking at a loan. I want that to be, the board does not have the money to do this. But given the current loans that I attached with this, I think we can reasonably incorporate that with what we have. We won't be essentially taking on more debt because we're changing the debt out with the travel with debt. So it should be a little easier conversation with Business Oregon about not bringing on more debt, just replacing the current debt with something else.
Well, and we had talked in the past that just kind of a general fiscal practice for us is to look at the cost of the loan versus the income that comes from it. And because, we, you know, the loan we have, the RV park pays for itself easily. And so that would factor into this. As long as we have tenants in here at such and such a cost, we'll come this close to matching the loan payment, that kind of thing.
So, right.
And like you say, you offset the travel and payments into this, and that would cover any extra if there was. So.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Fire marshal say anything about the building to the point where she thinks anytime soon?
She didn't make any inclinations like that. However, she has not yet been able to go and tour our posts that we have put up holding up the roof. So I have a feeling when she gets to, that's the last one she has to go through in there. I can't imagine they're just going to let it go for too long. And the electrical in that entire shop is an absolute disaster. Everybody's power comes out of Kenny's shop. All those buildings are ran out of that. Kenny decides your lights are off, he shut them off. But it's just, there's like multiple different add-ons that happen with that building. That.
Well, realistically, if we get this cleaned up, then that's pretty much handles almost all of our buildings except the office and has them up to date and up to speed.
Keeps us definitely within that. Boatyard shop building is by far our worst building that we have. There's other ones that could do that, but that one's the top of the list.
Okay. Any further? Motion.
Motion to approve port manager to seek designs and cost estimates for new boatyard shop buildings.
All right, second it.
Okay, we have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Sam?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item 8, the Chitco Indian Memorial Management and Maintenance.
Okay. So currently right now, the nonprofit organization, Chitco Indian Memorial Project, it was completed in 2020. They have been doing the maintenance for the Indian Memorial area. From what I understand, most of that was all paid for through a grant that went in hand in hand with building it. I know that grant since has ran out of money, and so they are asking that the Confederate Tribes of Sled Indian take over, the Tribal Council take over the maintenance of that area. So it's just kind of shifting from who's currently was in charge of it, running it, doing the maintenance, to now the Sled Indians, Confederate Tribe of Sled Indians.
Are they receptive? Have they been contacted?
They asked for it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they asked for it. So attached, we have a resolution changing the names. Where is it? This one right here. A resolution saying that it was under the Chitco Historical Indian Memorial and getting changed in the responsibility of management and maintenance to this one.
Okay. Questions? Comments?
Motion to approve resolution number 2023-09, management and maintenance of Chitco Indian Memorial Site.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. That brings us to action item I, and we have a new one of those.
Yep.
This is the collection account and request to file suit.
You want to take this one?
Sure. So in June,
At our regular meeting, the board approved that we submit the account of Al Mills from the Mountain View Motorcycle Shop for collection attempt due to non-payment. I sent that in, and I was recently contacted by Southern Oregon Credit Service. They have requested permission to file suit and begin legal proceedings. I asked what the court fees or involvement would be in that, since I'm new and this is the first time anything like this has come to my desk. What they said was, basically, we may be asked for a testimony in a Zoom or online meeting proving that he signed the lease and that these are the fees he owes and that
the
charges that they're accurate. Travis and I talked about it, and we wanted to bring it to discussion since there could be a possible testimony required by the court.
Yeah, so typically we continue on with the process, but given that we're going to a litigation, I wanted to bring it back to you guys and kind of put out that in the, we know we'll have more of these, that if you guys are okay with it, that in the future when we send somebody to collections, include in the motion that if litigation comes to proceed with it, so we don't have to do this. I mean, it's under, we always need to go to the extent to get our money back, and if we include it in one motion, it'll save this step on the next one.
Okay. Comments, questions?
And again, there's no cost.
No. I was told there'd be no additional cost.
Yeah.
So the only additional cost is the $5,200 is the filing fees and what that they're charging to do this action.
Right.
Includes what? Well, included in that. Okay.
It's included in that.
They get paid from a portion of the settlement.
Yeah, they get a percentage.
I don't know exactly what it is.
It's 25%.
25%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Motion to approve continuing the collection process and proceedings of litigation for the account of Hugh Helen Mills.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. So we have information item A. If it's okay with you, I would defer this until the other two are done because. So the other two information items are done, and then while we still have people here, I've got some commissioner comments to make or some things before we go into executive session.
Yeah.
So let's consider information item B.
As I kind of stated before, we do have a new fire marshal. She is in charge of Curry County and Coos County. She's done inspection of all port-owned buildings. Minor fixes were noted throughout regarding flood covers, daisy chain cords, fire extinguishers, and exit signs. The inspections are going to be, she'll come through on an annual basis. I expect that, you know, after these few corrections, they should become very routine and an easy process for us to go through. But I just felt it was good to bring it up that we do actually have somebody a little bit of oversight with what's happening here, and I think at the end of the day, this is a good thing.
Okay, item C, cybersecurity.
Information item C. So this was kind of another one I wanted to bring up. We have had some incidents of commissioners and employees receiving emails stating that they are either myself or a commissioner. The email addresses aren't our email addresses, but they are portraying themselves to be an employee or a commissioner. This is something that happens a lot, I guess. This is happening more and more. So I wanted to bring it up, the opportunity to be, it's about being aware. There's not a lot you can do from somebody sending you an email. But be aware that if you don't know who it's from, don't open it. And if you do open it, don't click on a link. I wanted to use it to tell you guys one of the things that we have done. to limit it is that all your email addresses were online on our website. So if a member of the public wanted to contact one of you guys individually, they had an email address to do that. We have removed those and put a generic email, commissioners@porterbrookingsharbor.com. Those emails will come into just one that can be reviewed and then distributed to you guys, so we don't have your email addresses just out there. And we did do the same thing with our staff emails as well.
So if we were to get an email, somebody sent me an email, for example, you would get it and then forward it to me?
We would forward it to your actual port email, but we're not just going to put it out there. So if you click on our website, you can see all of our email addresses, and it's just, it's kind of limiting the possibilities of something happening. And like I said, it's more being aware. You know, we all know how this operates. Sharon does not write our checks for us, and turn them into Richard, and Richard doesn't ask for money.
I'm asking you for financial information.
Yeah.
So when it happens, I needed to report it.
Yeah, and reporting it and just kind of, you know, being aware and knowing what our processes are, and if it's outside of what we do, that should raise a big red flag and should be addressed. That's it for that.
Okay, that brings us back to information item A, which is the goal meeting. Well, if you recall, at our last meeting, I asked you for authorization to go to the goal meeting representing the court and to testify, which I did, and my testimony was short and sweet. And both of the people that need to hear this, but there were industry reps there, and I said, if anybody has an interest in using the port as part of this project offshore, they need to come to us early and let us know what their requirements are going to be and what their expectations for the port are, so that we can look at our infrastructure to determine whether or not we can provide it, and if we can't, then we'll have to work out some way to get it. So that was the testimony. So the BOEM meeting, it's hard to be nice to characterize it. The BOEM people were there, very professional. They were talking about process they've used to select the site. And they explained all the science that's used, all the various layers of data that they put in there, including all the fishing data they have from both National Fishery Service and the state. They looked at things like whale migrations and, I mean, tons of stuff. And they sorted through all of that and came up with these collieries. There were a pretty large number of people there, and unfortunately we sent some of the dullest and dumbest of ours up there too, who were pretty far out of line. But the end result of that is that the comment period was extended. The comment period, again, is on the process that they're using, not anything else. So people were getting so far afield. They did have graphic depiction of what that's going to look like, and you're going to be able to see it from the shoreline. Remember, these things are taller than the Eiffel Tower, and so at 17 miles, you'll be able to see them. I got home, put my feet up on my park lounger, and I opened Facebook, and the first thing I saw was a report from somebody who had been at the meeting that said 1 million acres and 4,000 platforms. The actual facts are 296,000 acres and probably less than 1,000, maybe close to 400. So anyway, that was the bone meal. As kind of ancillary to that, I just came back from the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission meeting, and we got a report from our lobbyist about offshore wind energy. And it turns out that Europe and the Scandinavian countries, who were the pioneers in this stuff, are beginning to abandon it because they've determined that it's too expensive, it doesn't generate as much power as they thought, so they are now going nuclear. Whether that will affect us or not, I don't know. Further, the Pacific Council now is involved with these, and there are leases, current leases in California, that have proceeded much farther than ours. So today in the mail, I got the fisheries communication plan, which is required by BOEM of the contractor. And it's just one of many things they have to produce, but it describes how they're going to interact with the fishing community, how they're going to try and mitigate whatever impact they may have. So that's where we have an opportunity to actually have effective communication with them if somebody leases. So that's the big question. Given where we are, given the East Coast is beginning to have a lot of issues with offshore energy, New York State, for example, who has been a large proponent, has now withdrawn their support. So that may all coincidentally just catch up with this out here. I don't know. But that was the boat meeting. So if we have future opportunities, then we'll talk about going and providing testimony.
Since you've given that presentation, did anybody reach out to you or the board and say, hey?
Well, the lady that was here testifying, or, you know, talked to us in public comment, she sent an email to me and I responded. She said, are you guys going to come out against this? And I said, well, so then I kind of explained that there's nothing for us to come out against yet until we have some definitive proposals in front of us from the actual lessees. There's nothing to comment on except the BOEM process. I'm certainly not going to go and look at, I don't know how many different agencies and how many different PhDs that are providing this data and say it's wrong and you need more data. I'm not going to do that. We were successful, I think, through various means of getting them here. You know, these three meetings they had down on the South Coast were not originally intended, so they did come to Gold Beach, Brookings, and Coos Bay. So that's been fairly successful. They have extended the comment period. But again, you're not, unless you want to dive into it and say, you know, your data layer needs to have this in it, you really don't have much to comment on. And people need to remember that BOEM's job is to lease offshore land for energy development. Now, I'm currently asking some questions of them because they are a Department of Interior agency, whether they're bound by the rest of the Department of Interior's multiple use requirements. You know, on BLM land, for example, there are identified multiple uses, including recreation, wildlife, mining, timber, and grazing. So if they are a multiple use agency, and I'm pretty sure they are, then that offshore energy development has to include at least a consideration of other uses, not the least of which is fishing. The other thing that I just spent some time with the guy yesterday talking about the fact that they lack recreational data. They have data from logbooks and from EMS and all that other stuff of commercial fishing. They've got landing tickets, so they can identify commercial stuff pretty well, but they have no idea where we go. So I invited them to come down. I said, I will facilitate a meeting with fishermen, and we'll sit down with a chart and draw you lines where we go to tuna fish, where we tuna fish, and let you know exactly what our operation looks like and give you a rough estimate of how many boats from just before Brookings go out and participate in the albacore fishery, because that's the one that's most likely going to be affected. That's 17, maybe some salmon on the inside and tuna on the outside. So anyway, that was that. So a couple other things. At this meeting, coincidental, I met one of the skippers of the Yukina, the Dredge, and sat down and talked to him a little bit, and he mentioned the fact that he gets a lot of questions. Well, he'll come here and spend a day and then leave rather than finishing. And so what he explained to me is he said, when we're on that southern swing, we're also doing Gold Beach. And he said, so I have to be very careful about the weather coming into Gold Beach. So if I'm down at Brookings and I get a weather window, I'll drop Brookings and go up and do Gold Beach while I can. Then if I get blown out of there or I'm done, then I'll come back and finish Brookings. So that answered some questions for me, because I've often wondered, well, they were here yesterday and they're gone today. So that's why, because they're juggling that schedule between here and Gold Beach. Nice. We also got a report on the Klamath Dam removals. which was very enlightening to me because I find out that they are already have cut holes in the bottom of the four dams and have blasted in to where they have about 10 feet of dam left. And so they're preparing, Kako 2 is out, the other three are prepared. Starting right now, they're going to be drawing down all those reservoirs, and in January, they will finish breaching those remaining dams, and they're going to flush that out. The recovery efforts on the other side, which includes a lot of things, but a lot of fisheries recovery in the upper basin, including suckers and salmon, and also involving the farming and ranching communities, they have right now in their coffer $1 billion in funding to facilitate that. That's, in my years doing this, that's unprecedented. But the combination of COVID funding and all that stuff, they got tons of money. So that will include significant improvements to irrigation projects, fish passage at Kino Dam, which is right there at Klamath Falls, that will get the fish into the lake. Lots of upstore restoration of the Williamson and Sprague Rivers, and purchase of water rights from willing sellers in the Klamath Project, improvements in the Klamath irrigation deliveries, lots of stuff. So there's a lot of money involved, but that's a lot farther along than I realized it was, and it's going to happen.
Question, the Kino Dam, is that one they're going to, is one of the four they're reaching?
No, that one has fish passage. Both the two remaining have, there's a link dam right below that, and they both have fish passage now, and they're going to improve Kino so that it's better, because they're freeing up 456 miles of freshwater habitat. And when you get into Oregon especially, gosh, there's 49 streams, and I couldn't tell you how many springs that are cold water refugia that will feed that river that those salmon can go to. And that's part of the purpose of this whole project, is to be able to get those fish up into, I won't say climate-proof habitat, but into places where there's abundant cold water that they can actually go spawn. And I toured up there, actually above Klamath Lake and west of the Agency Lake, and there's a big basalt block there like everywhere else, and it is amazing how many springs there are. I mean big springs, 50, 80, 100 cubic feet per second springs coming out of 52 degree water. So there's a real potential that this is going to work. So I just thought I'd mention that because that was pretty interesting to me. So. All right, so now we are at the point where we're going to go into executive session.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
I missed the public comment segment. It went right by really fast. So I live, and this is regarding your dredging that you're going to be undertaking in the future. I live just in front of that, right up on the hill. And I just wanted to know what sort of impact it's going to have for the residents, like the odors that it's going to create, it dries and sits there.
We took some opportunities. Our engineers collected bottom samples around, and we set them out. And I don't remember exactly how we measured odor, but he determined that there wasn't going to be much odor for very long.
Okay.
There will be some material in there that, you know, algae and things like that, but his estimate was there weren't going to be much odor associated with it.
Are they just going to be in piles, one big pile, or several small ones, or?
So as we're dredging through the winter time, we'll be pumping into one large area. After our season of dredging is over, which is around March 15th, we will take dewater the whole thing and let that material dry. Once it's dry, we will push it over close to the fuel dock, mm-hmm. and we'll create one pile. And our goal is through the summertime, before our next dredging window comes in, that pile will be gone, and we will then add to it again. We don't want lots of material sitting for very long. It's just a storage area, and we do currently have the funding to to ship the current material off that we're going to be doing for the next 4 or 5 years. So we do have a solution for that. Wind and blowing dust may be an issue, and if it is, then we will utilize plastic and sandbags to put over the top of it to try and keep that dust down.
When you say dewatering, does that just mean let it dry?
It means kind of we're pumping into something where there's going to be a pond of water, and the material that we're pumping out, the dirt, sand, will settle out, and then the water pours out of the top. Once we're done dredging, we'll pull out what we call a weir. We'll pull that out and let all the water drain out of it. And then it will dry. It'll take 3-4 weeks possibly for it to dry enough to move it, and then we'll push it all over and start over. We are definitely taking into consideration people's houses smell, and traveling material.
The restaurants that are down here,
you'll see where we have the concrete blocks that we're setting out there right now. Those are significantly higher than what the water will even come up to be. The water's probably going to be 1 to 2 feet deep, but a lot of that is so that, the look, it kind of separates it, and it should keep, some of the wind and traveling anything kind of contained in there. And we will be monitoring it and making any adjustments we have to. So if there is any complaints or things that you're seeing that you would like us to look at, you can always come to the office and we will be happy to help you and see what we can do about it.
Okay. And we are limited. We can only dredge in the wintertime. We can't dredge in the summer. So it will be during the period when the temperatures are lower, rainfall, and so it should help mitigate anything
at the end of the day, when it's ready to get hauled off, we are still currently looking at different options, like a least cost option. The Tidewater, Freeman, seeing if they have any uses for it. If we can just give it away, more money ahead. But at the end, worst case scenario, it's, 38,000 cubic yards is a lot of material.
How contaminated is it going to be?
It's not contaminated. There's one area that we will be dredging that has been called out for us to retest because of possible contamination.
Right. Yeah.
And I cannot remember what the tributyline or...
It's a byproduct of the creosote coated post.
Yeah.
And so it's some butylene something, some petrochemical.
Yeah, it came. The test that we did, there was one area that came back inconclusive. So it was an area they said after we dredged we need to retest. But the rest of our basins, and that's in the corner down by the boatyard shop by Lower Harbor Road. It's just in that corner, which is where we're going to be dredging first, getting trained. So we will work through and get all that testing done first before we continue on. But the rest of it, all the tests came back in it.
We shouldn't have any problem getting rid of it then.
No, we won't have any trouble getting rid of it. It's just finding the least cost alternative to get rid of it. That will be what we have to look at.
Okay. Yeah. Just it'll have salt water in it, or have salt in it, the dirt will. So there's be a problem here, because who would have want salt in their yard or a garden,
Well,
depending on what the uses are, what people have it for, concrete plants and stuff like that, they have to process that and wash it anyways. So there is different opportunities. There's one thing that came to me that I never really thought about was arenas. You're not trying to get anything to grow. It's high in silt to keep it soft. So we'll be able to look at Crescent City, Gold Beach, anybody that owns anything like that. If they have, we'll have to look at all the options and have an open mind to getting rid of it.
But to be clear, you just don't go dredge. We're taking a lot of testing and permitting and engineering to be able to go do this. So it's a pretty involved process to get to the point at which we are now, where we're actually getting ready to go.
Yeah, Corps of Engineers, Department of State Land, DEQ all require us to do these testing, prove to what we have down there. So all those have been completed. And like I said, there's one spot where they have called out that could possibly be that we'll be looking at first thing this, when we start dredging.
Yeah, we don't want to be called hazardous waste because that'd be damn expensive to drill.
We won't hit that.
Yeah, that'd be a scary one.
Okay, so at this time we're going to adjourn and go into executive session. This executive session of the Port of Brookings Harbor Board of Directors is called pursuant to ORS 192.660(2)(h) to consult with counsel concerning the legal rights and duties of a public body with regard to current litigation or litigation likely to be filed. ORS 192.660(2)(f) to consider information or records that are exempt by law from public inspection. Any member of the media that is here may remain. However, the board will require that any information derived from this meeting may not be disclosed pursuant to ORS 192.660. So with that, we will adjourn the regular meeting.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye.